Second Jay. All right, let's read just a few verses here as we get down to the end. Verse 6. Moses and Aaron among his priests, and Samuel among them that call upon his name, they called upon the Lord and he answered them. And again, you heard somebody pray tonight. It's good to have a God that answers prayer. And I know we get impatient, but the Lord doesn't count time like you do. When you live in eternity, then, you know, if he answers you within a week or a month or a year, he's moved pretty quickly. So don't forget that. He answered them. We have a God that lives. He spake unto them in the cloudy pillar. They kept his testimonies and the ordinance that he gave them. And so we read last time and studied it, kind of went through it quickly, but the angel of the Lord spoke out of the burning bush. The Lord looked at them out of the cloudy pillar, and the angel of God was in there. So roughly speaking, it's safe to always read. I know that there are creatures that are angels. That's true. But when you're talking about the angel of the Lord, and at times an angel of the Lord, what you're looking at is how God chose to appear and speak to men. Okay? So it might help simplify you when you understand that. And, you know, a lot of stuff by a lot of commentators, the angels are messengers of God and all that. That lends a little bit of a misunderstanding to it. But the angel of God, or the angel of the Lord, or an angel of the Lord, is many times just how God chose to appear to somebody. Verse 8, thou answeredst them. Now just pause there for a second. You'll see something else in a second. But okay, there's a weird English thing. Thou, okay, not you. We would say you answered them. And whether you know it or not, what he wrote there is much more accurate, because you is not the same as thou. You can be, for us, you can be singular or plural. Thou is singular. God speaking, that's second person. That's second person singular, thou. And then he didn't just answer them. He answered them. And what that means is that he answered them, but the ST at the end makes you know that it still applies to the second person. So it's God answering them. And I know that that may seem arcane and all that kind of stuff, but whether you know it or not, the these, thous, yees, and so on, all those verb endings are much more accurate than the way we speak today. And so you're better off to learn a little of that. It doesn't take a huge segment of your brain to do that. For the 100 words in the King James Bible that you don't understand before you start reading them, it's not a huge thing for you to learn 100 new vocabulary words. Somebody that's a dental hygienist or a mechanic or a computer whiz-bang dude or whatever, they have their own language. You can hardly understand them speak because when they get off into geek language. Okay, well, if you do it for money, then can't you do it for God? Well, I don't understand what thou means. Right, yeah, I believe that. Thou answeredst them, O Lord our God. Thou wast a God that forgave them, though thou tookest vengeance of their inventions. Now, there's a great word, inventions. And there's nothing wrong as such with an invention in a certain context. King Uzziah's men, engineers, formed some siege weapons that he called, they invented these weapons to break sieges and to break down castles and stuff. And it says that they invented them, okay? Amos says that they invented instruments of music like David. So that's all good enough, but there's also another context. First of all, just be aware, I'm speaking here not of the fact that I want to throw out my coffee pot because some guy invented it and all inventions are bad. I know that all inventions are bad. But when man starts inventing stuff, whether you know it or not, he is gradually moving away from God. He's a fallen creature, and what he dreams up in his mind. There are some things that benefit all. I don't argue that. I'm not going to be interested in riding a mule to church, okay? I'm going to stay in the Ford if the Lord will let me. But the point simply is that in general, men's inventions, and so think about technology communications, think about the internet, think about social media, and then convince me that we are so much better off today. Because it's not really true. So there's a trend with the inventions away. Now, there's also context with inventions in the Bible. Look in Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. And this is a pretty good place to start. Okay, Ecclesiastes chapter 7, go down to verse 29. So here is King Solomon, and I know that all of his advice in Ecclesiastes is not the best. You're better off to stick with Proverbs, but you know he nails a few nails down pretty hard, and this is a good one. He says, "Lo, verse 29, this only have I found, that God hath made man upright, but they have sought out many inventions." And really, when you stop and consider it, that's what Eve did. Lord had a way and said, "Don't do that," and she invented a way to do it. Right? And that's kind of been our downfall as mankind throughout the generations. Look in Psalms 106. Psalms 106. I think inventions show up 8 times total in the Bible. There's 2 that are good, and the rest are not good. Psalms 106 and verse to get a context, in verse 28, they joined themselves unto Baal Peor. So that's the Numbers 22 through 24 segment, Balaam and Balak and all that stuff. They joined themselves to Baal Peor, ate the sacrifices of the dead. See that? Somebody's eating sacrifices they shouldn't. Verse 29, and they provoked him to anger with their inventions. So, religiously speaking, the pagan Moabites are doing things religiously that they've invented. They've invented their own sequence of sacrifices, and then they have suborned the Israelites to join them in their religious worship. And he calls that an invention. And that invention, it says, they provoked him to anger with their inventions, and the plague break in upon them. So negative, negative, negative. Verse 37, yea, they sacrificed their sons and their daughters unto devils. Now imagine that. Verse 38, and shed innocent blood, even the blood of their sons and of their daughters. So when it's talking about your sons and daughters going into that little valley just on the south corner of the diamond in Jerusalem that I was telling y'all about, where the valley of the son of Hinnom and the valley of Kidron join together, and they send their children through the fire unto Molech. That means that they're burning their kids into Molech. It may also include fire walking and all that stuff, but it's them sending their kids through the fire and sacrificing them to Molech. That's an Ammonite god. That's not even the God of Israel. But it's called an invention in just a second. If you look down in verse 38, they sacrificed unto the idols of Canaan. And so again, the gods of the nations are idols. So Molech, represented by an idol, is just a cheap spirit. He's just a fallen devil. But he was important enough to them that they sacrificed their children to him. So that's very pagan. You know, today you sacrifice them to your TV or to an iPad. Let a computer raise your kids. I don't mean yours. I just mean that's how people think, right? Okay, said enough there. Verse 38, the end of the verse. The land was polluted with blood. Thus were they defiled with their own works and went to whoring with their own inventions. It's stuff they made up. Instead of following a sound conscience and following the Lord, what light the Lord gave them, they went and made up their own stuff. Now, folks, if you don't know by now, that's what the Catholic Church has done. You're very naive. Because they took Christianity and corrupted it and polluted it, brought in sacramental salvation, seven sacraments, so there's seven ways to get grace. If you don't get grace that way, you don't get grace. And by the way, your method, Bible method of believing on Jesus Christ as your Savior, that is not one of the sacramental ways to grace. I'm just telling you. They bring in purgatory. Augustine invented purgatory to make money. That way, he can tell you grandma's in hell, and if you'll pay the church to light the candles, then she can probably get out. You know, 10,000 years early. I mean, it's so completely nuts, and it's so completely arbitrary, it's just wicked. But folks think that way, and perfectly modern 21st century Americans suck it up. Do you know how many justices of the Supreme Court, I mean, lineal thinkers, legal thinkers, you know how many justices of the Supreme Court are Roman Catholic? I lost count, but there's quite a few. And how much more respected is somebody than you know, a Supreme Court justice in general in society? And yet, you know, here's a guy that can work his way through legalese and presumably come up with the right answers. And yet he believes in praying to Mary and that she's the Queen of Heaven and that when the priest rings the bell, Jesus comes and jumps in the wafer. It's pagan. It's a stupid invention. And when you stop and examine it in that light, it's so despicable, it makes no sense. But there it is. But they went a whoring with their own inventions. Now, I'm not going to beat you to death with this invention thing, but I would take you over to just maybe one more. Romans chapter 1. This is a New Testament mention of it. Romans chapter 1. Suffice to say, in general, while man invents some cool enough stuff, the Lord doesn't condemn Uzziah's engineers for inventing siege machines, weapons of war. He doesn't condemn Amos for mentioning that men invented instruments of music. But the rest of the references to it in the Bible show man always with a tendency and inclination, a proclivity to move away from God in anything they develop. Anything that's man's development is a step, usually, aside, away from the Lord instead of the other way. Doesn't make things better at all. Romans chapter 1, down in verse 30 in a long list. Verse 28, even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge. There you go, right there, right? Just in general, men become uncomfortable and chafe under the bridle that the Lord puts on them. Your human nature needs a bridle. And so the Lord puts restrictions on, and man doesn't like it. And so, as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, you would rather have another kind of knowledge, i.e. Eve, right? Tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Lord's not showing me enough. There's other knowledge I need besides what He wants me to have. God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do things which are not convenient. Okay, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud boasters, inventors of evil things. Man's general trend in his invention is to invent away from the Lord rather than towards Him. Let's build a tower up to heaven. That was the first invention. And Lord, you know, he didn't knock down the tower, but he confused them so they couldn't complete the job, right? Man's trend is to always develop something that moves him away. So when some dork says, I go to a church that found a new way to worship, you can write them off immediately. Just so you know. All right, we're back in Psalms. Back in Psalms 99, verse 8. Thou answeredst them, O Lord, our God. Thou wast a God that forgavest them, though thou tookest vengeance of their inventions. So I'm going to get you for that, he says. Exalt the Lord our God and worship at his holy hill. I mean, in literally, doctrinally, millennium, where you're going to the holy hill of Zion and worshiping, okay? We don't. We will be ruling and reigning with the Lord in the millennium, but the nations are going to literally go to his holy hill. For the Lord our God is holy. Psalms 100, verse 1. All right, so we've been through this many times in the last few chapters because he keeps talking about singing and new songs and making a joyful noise. But make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all ye lands. And again, while singing now, yes, and the Lord would love to have us all sing, believing, literally, doctrinally, the millennium, and the Lord wants all lands to sing to him. Make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all ye lands. Serve, he says, serve the Lord with gladness. Come before his presence with singing. Okay, serve the Lord with gladness. I just got curious. Look in Deuteronomy chapter 28. Deuteronomy 28. Now, I don't think it's quite so much the case with us here so much. You're not practicing a dead religion here. I know why you guys are here, because you don't want to do that. But sometimes you probably come up a little short on the gladness side of things. Deuteronomy chapter 28. Go on down, if you wouldn't mind, to late in the chapter, verse 45. Now, at this point, the Lord is cursing Israel. He says, you know, if y'all are going to eventually go off and chase after idols, and I'm going to have to judge you, and I'm going to put a botch, B-O-T-H, botch on you in verse 35 that cannot be healed. He says some other things here. Verse 37, thou shalt become an astonishment, a proverb, and a byword among all the nations whither the Lord shall lead thee. So in captivity in many cases, or else the diaspora, they're just going to be a burden to people. He goes on down to verse 45. Moreover, all these curses shall come upon thee and shall pursue thee and overtake thee till thou be destroyed, because thou hearkenedst not, there's that D-S-T word that's hard to pronounce again, unto the voice of the Lord thy God to keep his commandments and his statutes which he commanded thee. And they shall be upon thee for a sign and for a wonder, and upon thy seed forever, because thou servest not the Lord thy God with joyfulness and with gladness of heart for the abundance of all things. He said, part of what I'm getting on you for is that you should have been a happy, glad serving people. And instead you treated me as if I were putting a yoke on you. And so, you know, it's worth examining hearts about, you know, how do you come to church? How do you go serve the Lord? How do you approach a Bible? How do you approach the privilege of prayer? You know, how do you go about life? You know, there are some Christians that look like they were weaned on pickle juice, as you've heard preachers say. And it shouldn't be that way. I granted, it's not all giggles. I know it's not all giggles. I'm not giggly. But there ought to be a joy and a gladness. Look, if you wouldn't mind, just to continue this for just a minute. Look in 2 Chronicles 29. 2 Chronicles 29. He keeps getting on him about it fairly often. And without running through everything, it's just that, you know, sometimes you lose track of it if you don't if you're not careful. 2 Chronicles 29. This time, go down to verse 30. Here is Solomon offering sacrifices. 2 Chronicles 29. When they had made an end of offering, the king and all that were present with him bowed themselves and worshipped. Hezekiah, the king and the princes commanded the Levites to sing praise unto the Lord with the words of David and of Asaph the seer, and they sang praises with gladness. They bowed their heads in worship. Now, we have really good song services here sometimes. I wish everybody was as glad as others. You know, once in a while you look around and somebody's really singing. A couple of these little kids are really getting into it sometimes. And just glad. And you understand what little kids don't. You ought to sing those songs probably with more understanding than you exercise, right? I mean, complete in thee and those songs. I know we love those songs, but, you know, you start considering those words. And there ought to be a gladness to it. Look in 2 Chronicles while we're nearby, chapter 30, verse 21. And the children of Israel that were present at Jerusalem kept the feast of the unleavened bread 7 days with great gladness. The Levites and the priests praised the Lord day by day, singing with loud instruments unto the Lord. And that's because Hezekiah has reinstated one of that feast. And so they're holding that feast for the first time in generations. And to hold that feast was just an issue of great gladness for them. But I just call to your mind, again, Psalms 100, verse 2, serve the Lord with gladness and come before His presence with singing. Come before His presence. Back in Psalms, a page back, Psalms 95, verse 2, let us come before His presence with thanksgiving and make a joyful noise unto Him with psalms. Look in Psalms 97, verse 5. The hills melted like wax at the presence of the Lord. Now, I understand that us coming before His presence is different than in the millennium, where literally people will come into His presence to sing. But the Lord lives in everybody here, if you're saved, and where two or three are gathered together in My name. So you get a couple of guys singing, and the Lord's there, if you want Him there. So, verse 2 of Psalms 100. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before His presence with singing. Know ye that the Lord He... Now we looked at that back in 99:8. Thou answeredst them. Second person. Here's another grammatical deal. Verse 3. Know ye that the Lord He is God. I learned in 8th grade grammar that you never do that. You never say, Fred, he did this or that or the other. I mean, my eighth grade English teacher would have taken a stick to me. Serious. That passage in Acts 26 where Paul said, I was the member of the most straightest sect of the Nazarenes. Most straightest. That's a double superlative. That is unacceptable in English. Now, here's the deal. English changes. Grammar, punctuation, stuff like that changes. Stephanie has to keep up with it because she proofreads books and stuff. And what used to be acceptable is now not supposed to be acceptable anymore. Okay? I was taught, if you know this or not, but if you say Jesus tears, I was taught that it's Jesus, J-E-S-U-S, apostrophe, tears, not Jesus's tears. Okay? Again, that was something that a grammar teacher would jump down my throat in high school. Well, now from what I understand, now it's proper to write Jesus' tears instead of Jesus' tears. Used to, I was taught that if you say red, white, and blue, it's red, comma, white, and blue, no comma. Now it's red, comma, white, comma, and blue. Okay, what does that mean? It means that men fiddle around too much. And it means that Bible punctuation is not always equal to our modern punctuation, our modern grammar. And over again, if you'll pay attention, it'll say, the Lord he, the Lord he, the Lord he, or the woman she. Okay, that's not good grammar in modern grammatical terms. But God is the author of the book, and he writes the way he wants to write. And, his book stays the same. And all the time, semicolons and colons don't mean the same thing to him that it means to us. So it's just best to, don't do anything outrageous. And if you're writing letters and stuff, and people don't write letters anymore anyway, but use good grammar, all that kind of stuff. But be aware that God's is different, and he doesn't have to follow your rules. It's kind of like when scientists said, there's no way that a whale's a fish. Because a whale's a mammal, and a fish is a fish. But Jesus said that Jonah's whale was a fish, and that Jonah's fish was a whale. So, the fish was a whale. Say it wasn't a mammal, how do you know? So, that's the point, is God can denominate things the way he wants to. He's the author of books, so don't worry about it. Anyway, just pointing out to you, I'm a little bit of a grammar dweeb sometimes. Verse 3, know ye that the Lord, he is God. It is he that hath made us, and not we ourselves. Okay, now what's not plain about that? It's God that made us, and we didn't make ourselves. God made us, we didn't evolve. God made us, we didn't make ourselves. Now, the new versions across the board say, it is he that made us and we are his. And then we are his people. But they double up. Instead of saying not we ourselves, they say we are his. Why would you do that? It's perfectly plain to me that God made us, and we didn't make ourselves. Now, why would I say, well, God got that wrong? God made us, and we are his. Well, it already says we are his people and the sheep of his pasture, so why do you double up on that? It's just men being dweebs. Verse 3, know ye that the Lord, he is God. It is he that made us, and not we ourselves. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. So there's your proof text for people being sheep. Okay? So that's what the Lord said, my sheep hear my voice. And so if you're saved, you're one of his sheep. And before that, you were a wolf or a child of the devil, serpent, generation of vipers, right? All right, enter into his gates. Okay, that's literal in the millennium doctrinally. Enter into his gates, his literal gates, with thanksgiving, and into his courts, his literal courts, with praise. Be thankful unto him and bless his name. That's important to say because people probably little realize that when Jesus gets on the throne, don't forget, for 1,000 years he rules the nations with a rod of iron. That is, they're not all happy he's king. And so by the end of the millennium, the devil comes out of the pit for a little while, released. And it's not very long before he has the whole world up in arms going against Jerusalem to kill this Messiah king. So you shouldn't just, when it says something like, be thankful unto him and bless his name, all ye nations, you shouldn't say, well, duh. Everybody's going to be happy when Jesus rules. They wouldn't be happy if he came back and ruled right now. There's going to be a bunch of mortal people down here on this earth that get born during the millennium that are not going to appreciate Jesus Christ any more than the protesters appreciate ice. That kind of rhymes. I didn't even plan on that. Enter into his gates with thanksgiving and unto his courts and with praise. Be thankful unto him and bless his name, for the Lord is good. His mercy is everlasting. His truth endureth to all generations. Now, you may not realize that I know it says there that his truth endureth to all generations. The Bible says 43 times that his mercy endureth forever. Now, I know what they say about Allah, and you know my opinion about that. Allah is not most merciful. Allah is not even very merciful. Since Allah is just a demon, Allah is not merciful. But his mercy, God's mercy, 43 times endureth forever. His righteousness endureth forever 3 times. His goodness endureth forever. His truth endureth forever 2. His righteous judgments endure forever. And you might know that his word endures forever. It says down here, his truth endureth to all generations. Now, that's kind of forever, but it's phrased different, all generations. Go back to Psalms 33 for the other thing that endures to all generations, Psalms 33. And verse 11. The counsel of the Lord standeth forever. There's something else that stands forever. The thoughts of his heart to all generations. How are the thoughts of his heart going to stand to all generations? Well, dude, they would have to be recorded. He would have to write down his thoughts and have them in the form he wants them so that you can read them and so that you're aware of them. So it endures to all generations. The Bible is not going to get torn up. It's not going away. I didn't realize it was 20 after already. I guess probably the prayer meeting went a little long. But any questions or comments? Cody.